Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today, I'm going to have a solo episode. I haven't had a solo episode in a while. I've been doing mainly interviews, so I thought I'd mix it up a little and concentrate on one of my most popular posts lately, and that is the five things your boss doesn't understand about test automation. But you know who does understand automation? Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. So, the past few weeks, I've been focusing on creating presentations for my first ever live conference where I'm going to be presenting at OrDev in the first week of November in Sweden. And for one of those presentations, I'm calling it the Test Automation Playbook, Succeeding with Automation Awesomeness. And basically what I've done is I've created a presentation based on my 15 years of experience, plus what I've learned from interviewing over 70 plus developers and testers. As I was putting together this presentation, one of the points I talk about is how we need to educate our managers when we're planning automation from the beginning. So from the beginning, you really do need to set your manager's expectations. So this podcast episode is basically, I'm expanding upon that subject that I'm going to be covering in my presentation. I've also created a blog on it called The Top 5 Things Your Boss Doesn't Know About Test Automation. I'll have all this information in the show notes if you want to check it out more. There are basically five things that struck me that most managers may not understand what's actually involved in test automation. The first thing your manager may not know about test automation is that test automation is not just a QA activity. This is an old mindset. And if your manager still has this mindset, you really need to set his expectations right up front. And the reason for this is, so it's kind of funny. As I was putting together this presentation, I remember the days when QA testers were treated almost like second-class citizens and developers really ruled the world. But you know, it recently occurred to me that we're all testers now. And much of this is driven by these agile DevOps processes. And as more and more companies shift left in their strategy of testing as early as possible in the development process, which really helps the team focus on quality from day one of your project, rather than waiting for, you know, defects to be uncovered later in the software development lifecycle, like some of us may have experienced with in the old days with waterfall development processes. So as more and more companies make the shift left in the development processes, testing and automation is no longer just a QA activity. So this means that the roles of developers and testers are beginning to blur. And in my experience, lately, most sprint teams I know have more developers than testers. I know a lot of agile practices say that there shouldn't be people that fulfill a role, that this role should be able to be filled by anyone on the team. And I agree with that, but up to a point, I think testers have certain skills that a developer doesn't have and vice versa. But I believe now that these skills are kind of morphing into one so that more developers are going to be involved in testing and more testers are going to be involved in development. So it's going to be really a collaboration effort going forward. And so when your manager hears that, say, for example, you need to create a test framework, they may think, okay, that's a activity that my QA resources will handle. And for you to be successful with testing, you really do need a framework for your automation efforts. I think that's critical. And if your manager thinks that it's still a QA activity, they may assign that to a QA resource. And In my experience, that's really not going to be successful. You really do need to have your developers, not a QA resource, build your framework. John Samez from simpleprogrammer.com, he was on episode 3, and he has some really great courses on Pluralsight and how to create a Selenium framework. And he brought up a good point in episode 3. He said, you're developing a framework, and that application is what you're going to use in order to be able to test this other application. So the key word here is developing. So if you're developing a framework, why not have your developers develop it for you? Developers develop, testers test. It just makes sense to me. But there's still a lot of resistance to this. Now, this is a generalization. You may actually have a QA resource that is a killer developer. By all means, if that's the case, that's the person you want to create your framework. But if you do not have that person that is a developer, that knows how to develop, that has developed in the past, and you just hand it over to a QA group that is new to automation, or they do things more with QTP, with keyword frameworks, you know, they're more of a beginner, I would not have them create your framework. So you need to tell your manager up front, look, we understand with continuous integration, with shift left, we need more test automation. We need more automation in general, not just testing. But that's a different point. That in order to do that, though, we need the whole team involved in this effort. If we don't have the whole team involved, then automation is not going to be successful. We cannot wait to the last day of the sprint to create an automation framework, to create our automated tests, or to stop thinking about automation. So my point is, you really need to set your expectations of your manager up front that testing and automation is no longer just a QA activity, that you need the team collaborating together. And from the beginning, if you're using behavior-driven development, test-driven development, that before a developer even writes a line of code or picks up a story for that sprint, that they've already thought about how they're going to test this application, what they need to do to make this application testable. If the application is not written with testability in mind, when you get to the end of the sprint, when you actually automate it, then you're not going to be able to automate it. So the manager needs to know that, it's no longer just a QA activity, that everyone's involved. And in order to be successful with automation, ultimately, everyone from developers, managers, business analysts, everyone down the line needs to be on board and needs to be thinking about testability from the beginning. So I've actually got a lot of feedback from people I've interviewed on Test Talks around basically the same exact concept. Marcel DeVries from episode 27. Marcel basically is a Microsoft coded UI developer engineer. He made a great point that if you work on a Scrum team story, then your definition of done should contain test automation. And so this is actually what my team is driving towards. And it goes as far as when a developer touches a piece of application code, say they touch a login page and they change the name of your user field to user Y, it's then their responsibility to go into that login page page object and change the element ID to the correct element ID. That's how much collaboration and integration that needs to go on if you plan on doing enterprise-wide test automation with continuous integration. That's what you need to do, and that's what your manager needs to know about. And like I said, I've heard this from multiple people. For example, episode 60, I spoke to Kellyano Rayokanda from the Gallup Group. The Gallup Group does a lot of test automation implementations around the world, and he brought up a great point. He said, you might be able to build an application, and that's great, but are you able to test it as well? And not only that, how many teams are actually asking that question right in the requirement phase? And I agree with him. I think that is what we need to do in order to really be successful with automation. So that's point number one. Test automation is not just a QA activity. The second thing your boss might not know about test automation is that faster is not necessarily better. So just because you have lots of automation doesn't mean your application quality will be better. I think a lot of people equate a lot of automation scripts with quality. For example, just the other day, I was talking to a manager of another team, and he showed me an executive dashboard and showed his project. It was like 90% of all tests were automated. And he told me these tests never fail. So he was really proud of that. But hearing that scared the heck out of me, because I'm guessing that these tests probably, you know, and honestly, probably suck at actually testing important things, or they aren't really doing anything. To me, this metric points out negligence, not quality. Another example I have, I know of a team that was running in our continuous integration environment for about a year. And everyone was like, yeah, this team is awesome. They have, you know, 99% coverage of their unit tests, and these unit tests are fast, and these unit tests are happening after every check-in, and everything's great, and rah, rah, rah. So like a year later, the CI team implemented a new tool called Test Advisor that can analyze your test to see how well the coverage is and if they missed anything. And it turns out these tests weren't doing anything. That we had all these tests, and these tests, even, you know, they would never catch anything. Even if there was a failure, they would never fail. So that even though we had all these fast unit tests, even though we met this metric, and it probably, you know, I could see all the managers, you know, pointing to this dashboard going, yeah, look at our unit tests. We're at 98%. They're probably getting bonuses. And the application sucks still. And the reason why is because they have sucky tests, sucky unit tests. So stop doing it. Just because you have automated tests, if the unit integration, doesn't matter. So just because these tests are faster doesn't mean it's going to be better. So Goiko Adzik, in episode 62 of Test Talks, 50 Quick Ideas to Improve Your Tests, brought up a great point. I love this quote. He said, often people perceive that automation makes things better, and it doesn't. Automation, by definition, makes things go faster. Now, I love test automation. I think automation is essential. You need automation. And like I said from the beginning, we need more automation as we go forward with our continuous integration, DevOps types practices in the DevOps world. You're going to need more and more automation. But just because you have faster tests doesn't mean you have quality. So your manager needs to know that not only do we need automated tests, but we need the right mix of tests, and that these tests need to be testing the right thing. So Goiko also mentioned that what he often sees, especially working in teams that are stuck with a ton of automated tests that they can't maintain, is what they've done is a fast food equivalent of testing, meaning they've written a bunch of things that were really easy to write and automate, but are basically ineffective in uncovering issues with their application. So sure, in theory, they may have the coverage, they may have a lot of tests, but as they accumulate, they start suffering more and more, because when they have these tests that are hurting them, automating them only makes hurting happen more often. You need to automate, yes. You need tests to be fast and automated, but you need to make sure you automated the right things and that you're validating the right things, and then you're not just taking a manual test that stinks to make an automated test that stinks. And just because you have a lot of automated tests that run fast doesn't mean you have quality. So the third common thing your manager may not know about test automation, and that is test automation does not replace manual testing. So no matter how good your test automation scripts are, they will never, ever replace someone that does some sort of manual exploratory testing against your application. Now, I'm not saying that we should have a huge group of manual testers, and what I'm saying is that testing is becoming more and more important, and it's not just the role of a tester to test, that everyone needs to be testing, and that it's always going to be better, or you're always going to, and that oftentimes the most critical bugs you find are going to be found by people doing manual explorer type testing against your application, not your automated tests. Not most likely your automated tests aren't most likely going to find these critical bugs. So it really is, you know, a combination of some very high-end intellectual manual testing and test automation. It's really a combination. So I had a really interesting conversation with the friendly tester, Richard Bradshaw, in episode 47 called Can Automation Do Actual Testing? And Richard has a great quote. He says, automation can't test because it can't learn. Now, some of us can debate on this, and that's not the point. The point is that automation really can only do what you tell it to do. It needs to have a predefined set of steps that it expects to be that expects to happen in a certain sequence. And once that sequence is out of place, it can't handle it because it can't think. Where you have a manual test that can, because it's able to interact in real time to different conditions where an automation script can't. So he talks about automation basically as checking, that it can check things, and it's great for checking, and that's awesome. There's a lot of tests that we do that needs to be checked. That gives you confidence in knowing that maybe you didn't break anything because you have a bunch of regression tests that are going back and testing what worked before. You made a change. You introduced a new change. Those tests are still working. That's awesome. But in general, automation tests can't really think. So they shouldn't be the only type of testing you have as part of your testing strategy. I've been reading a book by Daniel Pink. It's not a book on automation. It's called Drive: The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And I came across an interesting paragraph that, even though he's not talking about testing, I think it does apply to testing. And he said that behavioral scientists often divide what we do on the job or in learning in school into two main categories. One is algorithmic, and the other one is heuristic. And an algorithmic task is one in which you follow a set of established instructions down a single pathway to one conclusion. So doesn't that sound familiar? In order to automate something, it needs to be deterministic and it needs to be algorithmic. If you have tests that are not deterministic, if you don't know what's going to happen, those are poor candidates for test automation. He then goes on to say that there's usually an algorithm for solving that particular issue. A heuristic task is the opposite. Precisely because no algorithm exists for it, you have to experiment with possibilities and devise new novel solutions. So he gives an example of working as a grocery checkout clerk is probably more algorithmic. When you do pretty much something over and over again in a certain way, that's what he considers an algorithmic type task. But when you're doing something creative, like creating an ad campaign, painting, those are mostly heuristic things. And I think manual testing, exploratory testing falls into the heuristic category. So even though we need test automation and we're going to be automating things, not everything can be automated. And things that are automated sometimes shouldn't be automated. And that automation is not going to replace your manual testers. Or I should say automated tests are not going to replace your manual testing efforts. That you're still going to have to do manual testing. And not still, you're going to want to do manual testing. If, in fact, Daniel Pink is correct, then you want to focus a lot on heuristics. You want to think of as a customer, put yourself into your customer's shoes and create tests, think it from a customer's point of view as you're exploring, as you're playing around with your application, thinking of cases that you may not have thought about that your automated tests can't really do because it's really not a step-by-step process. You're doing things a little randomly and you're able to react to different pop-ups that may occur based on what you've done, that these pop-ups may happen on random that an automated test wouldn't handle. So these are the kind of efforts is something you should definitely focus on. And your manager needs to know that this is what needs to be done, that you just don't have a bunch of automated tests, run your test and you can just go live. You need manual testing. You still need people with eyeballs to look at your application. And I think that's critical. And your manager needs to know that test automation does not replace manual testing. Also, one other point Daniel Pink brings up is when he's talking about goals. He talks about how certain goals can be almost toxic to your organization because it rewards the wrong things, or you're rewarding things you think are important, but in fact, it's actually doing the opposite of what you anticipated. And one of those metrics is I've worked with a team and they've had this metric for a while and it causes lots of issues. And the reason why it came from managers down up to say, thou shall have 80% of your test automated. And they really have that is the goal. 80% of tests should be automated. I actually had a conversation with another manager and they said, look, this group only has 69% of the tests automated. We need to get that bumped up so it's 80%. And so what do you think is going to happen with that metric? Think about it for a while. You have teams, they're in a sprint, they have a definition of done, and they're being told they need automated tests. And I agree, you need automated tests, it needs to be automated, they need to be involved. But if you overemphasize that metric, 80% automated, all they're going to do then is test automation. No one's actually going to look at the application with their eyeballs, even to just double check certain things or do a little exploratory testing. And it actually has a negative impact where you start gaming the system. So if a manager thinks that equals quality, that 80%, then what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is you're going to have testers that are creating a bunch of useless automated tests. You're going to have a large test suite of automated tests, and it's going to be bloated with lots of unnecessary tests that are just created to meet the stupid metric. I even had a conversation with someone else about this, and they told me that, and I asked them, what about if we had 69% of tests automated, but they were automating the right things. They were doing good automation. They were doing good checks, validating the correct things. And that there were really reasons why we couldn't automate the other 31% of our test. And the manager's like, no, we need we need 80% automation. It just drives me crazy. It's just so stupid in that you really need to solve. I know sometimes you can't solve stupidity, but you really need to try your best, because this will really sabotage all your efforts if you have managers that are this thick-headed. So that's a bonus thing you need to set your manager's expectations to. Tell them tell them no stupid metrics. And when they tell you a metric like that, make sure you tell them why it's stupid. And I don't care if it came down from the highest person, the person that created the company. You need to tell them it's stupid and that they're ignorant by going with that metric. And if they don't listen to you, then that's their fault. But you need to educate them as much as possible. And so the fourth thing your boss doesn't understand about test automation is that not everything should be a UI test. And I think this is actually a symptom of the first point of test automation is not just a QA activity. If you didn't set the expectation of your manager up front that it's a team effort, that developers need to be testing also, unit testing, integration testing, then that you're going to get into a point where just everything is a UI automated test when it could be done better at a lower level. And the reason why you're not getting the coverage at the lower level is because your developers are not testing. So that's a key point. So a symptom of this also is if you're currently running hundreds of thousands of automated tests, it's probably an indication that you're trying to do way too much with Selenium or QTP. So I had a great conversation with Jim Evans in episode 28. And Jim Evans basically is the key contributor to the Selenium project. He's also the man behind the Selenium .NET bindings and the Internet Explorer driver. And Jim brought up a great point. He said, if you're running hundreds of thousands of Selenium tests, that's probably an indication that you're trying to do too much with Selenium. So no one could blame Jim Evans for not loving Selenium, not loving automation. And even one of the key contributors to Selenium is saying, you're probably using too much Selenium tests. If you have hundreds of thousands of these tests, it's going to cause you more headaches. And the reason why is, as if anyone's been doing automation for any amount of time, UI automation is difficult. It's hard to maintain. It's hard to be reliable. It's slow. And as we go to continuous integration, faster feedback is needed. And this faster feedback, the best way to get there is to do lower level tests, unit tests, integration tests, so REST tests, web service tests, database tests, and then only then you have some tests that do UI level testing. And once again, if your developers are not thinking of testing from the beginning, this may be a symptom of that. They're not building testability into your application. Johan Halaby, he created one of my favorite frameworks of all time called REST Assured that helps you test REST services. He also created a bunch of other open source libraries like PowerMock. So Johan Halaby is a real developer. In my experience, real developers test. Pretty much all developers I've interviewed on Test Talks love testing. And he had a great quote also. He said, if your developers are developing from the beginning and they're decomposing your system into smaller parts, then you're able to test them individually. And if you're able to test each part individually, they become easier to test and your tests will run faster. So if a developer is not thinking of testing from the beginning, it's going to make it really hard later on to be able to do any other tests other than a UI test. And if you're going to be successful with continuous integration, you need more tests that are faster, that are quicker. And so test size really does matter. You want to have a majority of your tests as fast tests. So think unit type tests. And then the second group would be slower tests, but they're still fast. They're doing integration type tests, REST tests, web tests, REST tests, web service tests. And then only then, when you can't get coverage at the lower levels, then you introduce a UI level test. Also, Danielle Louise Warman, she works at ASOS, which is a fashion company. She had a very great point. And she said, it's best to have lots of tests done at the unit and then integration level, and then the UI as a last resort. And that one of her biggest lessons learned as a tester is to ensure coverage is there with the other types of tests before you create a UI test. So to make sure before you create a UI test that you look to see, is there a unit test that could test this? If the answer is yes, create a unit test. If not, continue. Is there an integration test that can cover this? Yes and no. If the answer is yes, create an integration test. If it's no, then only then would you create a UI test. Also, if you find a bug in development and for some reason your test missed it, you should analyze that test to see, is there a unit test that should have caught this? And if not, could there be a unit test that could catch this in the future? And then once again, work your way up. This is also known as the test pyramid. So think of this pyramid where the majority of your tests are fast tests. Middle layers, you have fast, you know, kind of medium fast tests. And then only at the top, you have a small group of slow end-to-end tests. So UI test, if your manager is saying, well, no, a real user would only test our application through the UI. So there's truth up to a point with that statement. You can get coverage if you have a few journey tests that test your application all the way through like a real user. But not everything needs to be a UI test. So you don't need these long UI tests. And in fact, if you do have UI tests, the quicker they are and the more focused they are, the better off you'll be when you run in continuous integration. So once again, your UI testing would break into faster and slower, and the majority of them should be faster, with only a few being really journey end-to-end tests that you know will take longer. And so these types of tests really are going to help you if you're starting to continuous integration and you have some sort of quality gate in place where a developer checks in code. And the first level of checks is you run your fastest test possible, your fastest unit test. And then only then, if it passes, if there's no failures with the unit test, then it goes to the next level. And in that next level, you run your integration test. And then if it passes that, it goes into the next gate. And the next gate is it runs your fastest UI test. And then later on, overnight, it may run your entire test suite of your slow moving UI test. But at every layer, you're getting quick feedback to your developer, quicker feedback, so they have more and more confidence knowing that the code they checked in didn't break anything. So that's why it's critical that you have fast tests so that you can get that feedback to your developer as soon as possible. And that's the reason why you really need to set your manager's expectation that not everything should be a UI test. So it also comes down to, if your manager is dictating technology and how you're doing things, then they're probably stepping into a realm where you've been hired to do a job. You're the expert. And so you need to tell them, look, do you trust me? If you don't trust me to do the job, then there's a fundamental issue here that we're never going to get over. Trust me to do the technical right things, and you focus on the other things that you're good at, the managing piece, the whatever managers do. But you know, leave the technical domain to the technologist and leave the managing domain to the managers. And the fifth thing your boss doesn't understand about test automation is changing test tools is not going to solve your automation issues. You know, it never fails. We have a critical release when we need to run our automated test, and something happens where sprint teams weren't keeping up with the automated test and they were failing and no one was looking at the CI and taking care of those tests proactively. So when we got near the end, where we actually had to have everything run and everything run cleanly, 100%, we have issues. So what happens? Management starts blaming the test tools. This is not only common for managers, also developers will do this. And it drives me crazy because a lot of people don't listen to their test. If your tests are slow, if they're unreliable, if they're acting randomly, they randomly pass, if they're flaky, most likely you have a deeper issue that you're probably ignoring. It's a concept of code smells or listening to your tests. Matt Wayne, the main contributor to the BDD Cucumber Project, he also wrote a book on, one of my favorite books on BDD. It's the BDD Cucumber book. He says, listen to your tests. Listen to the code. If something is hard to test, if it's slow, if it's unreliable, there's probably a deeper issue there, that your tests are telling you something. There's probably something wrong with your application. Just throwing more hardware on top of it is not going to solve your issue. It's just going to put a Band-Aid on top of it. And then it's not your test fault that it's being unreliable. It's the fault of, like we said from the first 4 points, that there's unrealistic expectations that you're probably assigning your testing activities just to your testers, and that your developers are not thinking of testability from the beginning, that these are just a symptom of something bigger. And you can't just say, let's switch tools and that's going to solve what actually caused these symptoms. I have a great example. I worked with a team and the manager said, look, we have all these quick test professional tests, and they're slow. They're unreliable. They're hard to maintain. Let's switch tools. Let's go to Selenium. We'll go open source, and that will be better. So this team moved over to, they created a Selenium testing framework, and they had a bunch of tests. And a year later, guess what happened? Yeah, their tests were unreliable. They were slow. They were hard to maintain. And so what's funny is the manager came back and said, you know, I have a great idea. We should move to unified functional testing. I heard UFT got better and that it's going to be better. So we're going to move everything to UFT and everything will be better. Look, it's not the tools. It's you. It's you. You're the problem. Your manager's the problem. And most likely, a lot of people on your team's the problem. And just by changing tools is not going to solve the problem. You need to solve the behavior that got you there. And the behavior is what's causing it. I have developers on my team that were complaining about our BDD tests that were failing in the continuous integration environment. And we told them, look, there's a real issue with your application. It randomly is doing a certain behavior that when a test logs in, it expects it to be in a certain state. But because it's not, it's failing. So the BDD are randomly failing. So what do they think? They say, oh, the BDD tests are randomly failing. Yes, it's randomly failing because your application is broken. What do you expect? It's just insanity that that everyone is so quick to blame things rather than look at the real, true issues. Yes, automation is tough. Yes, you will have flaky tests. But a lot of times, that is a symptom of something bigger, that maybe your application, you know, it may be when your automated tests fail that you may actually have an issue with your application. I know. It may be an epiphany to some people, but it's so true. So don't blame your test tools. That is just such a lame way to get out of things. And also, I've seen teams that will you know, maybe they want to learn a new tool, so they go along with the manager. Yeah, it's definitely the automation tools we're using. We'll go to Selenium. That'll fix everything because they want to learn Selenium. Do the right thing. Find out what the behavior is that are causing your test to be random, to be flaky, and see if you can change that behavior, that you can bake in testability from the beginning, so that later on when you get to automation, that your tests are more testable and that everyone is collaborating together as a team. Testing is not just an activity left for a resource that is a QA tester on the team. It's like saying that your application you create in C# sucks, so that rewriting in Java will solve your problems. So you have developers that write crappy C# code, your application's going to stink. What makes you think that changing technologies to Java is going to solve your problem? It's totally stupid. The problem is not your test tools, it's your teams. So keep that in mind. Changing tools is not going to solve any team dysfunction you might be dealing with that are causing your automation efforts to be either ignored or neglected. If you're really agile, if you really want to go with continuous integration, if you're really going to make the transformation to a DevOps world and really stop focusing on your customer, then you really need to have automation in place, but you need to have all these other things in place. And the place that it starts with is setting your expectations of your manager up front so that later on you'll have a better experience with your automation effort. So those are my top five things your boss probably doesn't know about test automation. So they are: test automation is not just a QA activity. Not everything should be a UI test. Test automation does not replace manual testing. Faster is not necessarily better. And number five, changing test tools is not going to solve your automation issues. So that's the end of this episode. I think it actually started as an episode and ended in a rant, but I had to get it out, and I think a lot of people will agree with me. If you don't, go ahead and leave a comment at www.testtalks.com/74. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link to click on the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And while you're there, why not click on the subscribe in iTunes link? Subscribing to iTunes really helps the show, and also leaving reviews and ratings really helps the show in the rankings. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a coworker or friend to help spread automation awesomeness to the masses? So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with test automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.